gathered again, friends, neighbors, the little ranch house on Southwood Drive. Show number... How much? Wait a minute. Shall I go?
Yep, 206.
206?
Yeah.
206. Well...
What a deal.
Why anybody would want to listen to 206 hours of this, I have no idea.
No.
But anyway, we're here at the Blind Handyman, recorded at the Little Ranch House Recording Studio on Southwood Drive in Lufkin, Texas. And let's see, what else should we say? It's, today is the 5th of September, believe it or not.
We've stumbled. Hard to believe.
It is hard for me to believe that it's September already. But it is. Don Patterson is with us today.
I am indeed.
He is indeed.
And today, coming over, the warden commented on the fact that it actually looked like a September day. Sometimes when I moved up here, September wasn't any different than August. I mean,
that's
it was hot.
But
now this actually kind of looks like the fall is kind of wanting to come in. We've had a mild summer, and I think we're going to have
fall.
A neat winter. I wouldn't mind having a cold winter. Really kind of.
We've got this kind of rainy stuff going on. Don Shaw, how are you, sir?
Doing good. Everything's kicking along fine.
I had too much bass on my mic. Now that's better, isn't it? Yeah. I was doing some promos the other day for the radio station Livingston and had it down on...
Have to crank up that bass, huh?
Yeah, so you can see the Livingston Lions this Friday night. You know, say that silly.
Yeah.
Silly stuff that promo guys say. Anyway, we're here and gathered in our studio and it's going to rain. No question about that. Has it started yet?
It has not, but it could any second.
At any moment, huh?
Talking about ball games, I thought that was kind of neat. For those of you who come to the Friday night Blind Handyman chat gatherings, that was kind of neat how you did about the last 2 minutes of the game last week.
Yeah, Lufkin Panthers.
Yeah.
Did you list the game, Pat?
Did not.
They were behind 13-3 at halftime.
Right.
And pulled it out 16-13.
I knew they had won, but I didn't think it was an impressive win. I mean, I'd heard that it was not, and we don't even know. I mean, that doesn't really bode well for the remainder of the season, I think.
Oh, I think it does fine, considering that we haven't lost a season opener since 1991 or something. So.
Yeah, but I'm not sure that Longview would be considered as a major powerhouse, so we'll see.
Really?
We will see.
Well, I was just happy to beat them.
Yeah, me too. I always take a win. Did J.P. Heath do the game?
J.P. Heath did the game, son.
All right, that's good. That is an improvement.
That is an improvement. He did him and did a nice job. Had a guy named Gary something doing kind of color for him.
They don't have that other, the...
You mean the guy... You mean
that boy there that talks like this?
Yeah, what?
David McKelvin. Don't have it. They don't listen to the show. They don't know. But he had the guy on the sideline, I think it's David. He had the guy on the sideline on all the time. So it's like three guys doing the game, all three very knowledgeable guys.
All right, was the sideline guy David McKelvin?
The sideline guy's David McKelvin. Okay. The guy up in the booth was Josh Havard.
Yeah, and J.P. Heath.
And J.P. Heath did the games, and Gary, somebody was... color guy. You can listen to these if you wanted to, at kybi.com, I think.
Okay, cool.
If you wanted to go listen to
them. They're on the web, huh?
Yeah, I think they're streaming on the web, kybi.com. I think that's still good. If you didn't, let me know, and we won't announce anymore.
Or you could listen to the last 2 minutes. You could have last Friday night right there on For the People.
On For the People. Well, it was pretty exciting, so I put it on. We had a lot of ball fans. Yellowhammer was there, and he's a big football fan, Max, and, you know, so just stuck it on. Anyway, come join us if you're not a For the People guy. We do a little at 9 o'clock Eastern on Friday nights on FTP Radio, FTP, the For the People site in the Blind Handyman Room. There's a bunch of us gather over there and just shoot the breeze. So come and be with us if you like. All right, Donald, are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Let's see... some of these we've kind of visited before, but we're going to do it again. And the first one's kind of a two-for-one question. But anyway, I think it's a good one and real appropriate for the show. And I'm going to withhold the answer that came with it and see if you guys can come up with anything. Okay?
Uh-huh.
It says, now, what is the difference between a plain electric miter saw and a compound miter saw? Which do I need to install crown molding? Also... which is the best method for attaching crown molding to walls and ceilings, glue, nails, staples, etc.?
Well, no, the difference is a compound miter saw will cut two angles at once.
That is true.
It would cut one angle, and then you can tilt it.
can.
In other words, you can take the saw and move it side to side, and you can tilt it over on its side also.
Yep.
That's the compound and compound miter. Two angles at once, and you really only need a miter saw to do crown molding. You never cut. You're not going to cut two angles at once, are you?
Yes, you are. On some of the bigger crown molding, and the problem with a regular miter saw cutting crown molding is you've got to hold the crown molding at the angle that it's going to be affixed to the wall to do it, because you're only cutting that one angle. Where if you had a compound miter saw, you could cut the both. Really, at 45s, and the crown molding is mounted on a 45. And so I've screwed up quite a bit of molding trying to cut it. So it'd be very difficult for a visually impaired or blind person to do on a plane saw.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's where and those angles, they'll get you. You'll be figuring, that's got to be right, and you'll cut it, and it's wrong.
It's backwards.
Backwards.
I've cut a ton just plain. You put it up there.
Yeah.
Now, door molding, if you were going to frame a door or a picture frame, a little miter saw is perfect. It cuts the one angle, like H trim around a door or whatever. Also, to elaborate a little bit on the...
I thought you cut the second angle on crown molding or quarter round that you would put down with a coping saw. That's what you cut it with when we did this bathroom. You made coping saw.
That is not crown molding. That is baseboard molding.
Yeah.
There's a lot of difference. Baseboard molding is fitting up on the wall on a flat side. And you have to make two cuts on that. I learned that from John Huey Porter, how to cut that. That angle, but crown molding goes in the seam up like a ceiling and a wall, and it is at a 45 degree. In other words, part of the crown molding is attached to the ceiling and part to the wall, and there's a hollow space behind it. It's like putting a picture frame around your ceiling,
okay.
But it's at an angle, and so to
so it's
just,
not just flat trim.
No,
like,
it's
like
not.
This,
it's
like right up there.
Yeah, it's kind of oval. It's kind of.
I know what it looks like now. I didn't
so
know what
you
it was
have,
called.
Yeah, and you have to have two angles to get that to where it matches.
Yeah.
And also back on the saws too. There's really two types. There's the compound miter saw, regular, and or the third one would be a sliding compound miter saw.
Yes, sir.
I've sort of changed my opinion on things. The cost gets kind of involved when you go from miter saw to compound, and then it goes even up higher if you want to go to a sliding compound.
Yep.
Sliding compound would just allow you to cut wider wood stock. Anymore, I would say, depending on your job, because I'm probably looking at two guys that have not used their miter saws in a while. Just
yep.
Don did. Maybe he put down
so.
Some flooring. But, okay. Anymore, I would say rent one. That got a project, go rent it. If you were going to do a small little picture frame, door frame, like we said, just a regular miter saw is good. A sliding compound. It's going to cost you more money, and I just doubt that you'll ever use it that much. Also, if a tool show thing comes to town once in a while and sells, I bought one for less than $100, and it was my fault that it's worn out, not its. I left it out in the weather and did everything to it that you could possibly could to abuse it. So, but if I wanted a good, nice miter saw to do a specific job, I would rent one.
If you're just going to put up crown molding, there's no point in buying one because a nice one's going to cost you $150.
Yeah, or more. You can go to Sears and spend $500 on one,
Yeah, I wouldn't buy. I'd buy one at Lowe's or Home Depot. I wouldn't
Absolutely.
Buy one at Sears. I'm just not much on Craftsman tools, but a lot of people use them and a lot of people like them. But renting one, where would you rent one? I guess a regular rental.
A tool rental. Yeah, we have Tim's now. Mm-hmm. I think Havard here is out of business, but Tim's has always had everything from backhoes to backhoes to saws. Also, in the second part of the question is how to attach it. Our little nailers that we like so well.
They're cheap and work well.
Cheap and work well, and a blind guy can really use them. The key to putting up crown molding, especially, is there's a certain place that you're supposed to nail the nails, like in a little seam. So I would always find out, even if you have to lower your standards and ask a sighted person or even a carpenter, where is the proper place for the nails. And screws tend to crack, that sort of thing. I wouldn't do screws.
Too small for screws, isn't it?
It's big. Crown molding can be really wide, but it's thin. And so it tends to crack. Also, they make the synthetic plastic ones that you can hold up with adhesive, like caulking or glue. Yeah. But even still, there are a few finishing nails wouldn't hurt. So I would get a nailer.
Those little nailers, little small nailers that'll do a 3/4-inch nail are cheap and worth every penny. Little electric nailer.
Yeah, Don Shaw.
Yeah, they're handy for trim and stuff like that. Paneling, that. Things like that, they're good.
All right, go ahead.
Okay, maybe we solved that person or confused them. I wouldn't know.
Who knows? Yeah. What evil lurks in the hearts of men?
Okay, we've all been here before. In fact, Phil tells tales that every time he visits certain motel establishments, I won't mention any, that he examines a lot of stuff, so this might be right up his alley. It says, I'm trying to install a security chain on my front door. And don't know which side of the lock goes on the door. Also, do you have any installation tips?
The chain hangs on the door frame.
That's correct.
Because if it doesn't, you might get it closed in the door.
Right.
A little slide goes on the door. Just put the chain thing on and then put the slide thing over as far as you can get it and still hook the chain in it, and bingo.
Right. The answer that came with this one said, to follow the manufacturer's recommendation as far as the distance, but placing, you don't want to get the slide too far, because then when the door was closed, you couldn't get the chain
in there.
And also, there is, and that would be the only thing, too, to installing that is use 2-inch screws. You want to, at least on the door frame, chain on the door frame.
Yeah, you want it to be solid.
And,
unless you want to be able to open the door on the chain and talk to somebody through it, I have a better solution.
Okay, well, there's another recommendation, too, right. And also, you might want to pre-drill your holes, rather than trying to drill in the screw without a pre-drilled hole. Okay, you're suggesting the other kind. Go ahead.
The other kind is called a flip lock, and it's very simple. You simply put it on the door frame, and there's a little screw that determines whether it's a right-hand or a left-hand flip lock. You put the screw in the top if it's a left-hand, and the bottom if it's a right-hand, because you want to be able to drop it down when you flip it around. But it's just a little piece of metal attached to a bracket. You put it on the door jamb or the door frame on the inside, and it goes between the door and the door jamb, and then there's a thing that flips around and drops down, and buddy boy, you won't open the door without tearing the house down.
Yeah, that's that little lever that you flip over, and it goes over the little chit thing.
And then it drops down, and you can't move it.
When you open the door, it slides in that opening until it comes to the end of that.
That's right. They're very cheap. They're, $4.95, $3.95 at any hardware store. It's called a flip lock. And, buddy, unless you just want to open the door on a chain and talk to somebody through it, this is a better, easier, cheaper solution.
And that's the way, and that would mount similar to the chain. Just be sure you learn which part goes on the door frame.
Well, no, it's just one piece.
Oh, okay, it is.
It's just one piece, and it mounts flat on the door jamb like it would be its main part of it would be between the door and the door frame.
Okay.
So it mounts flat, and then this thing flips around in front of the door, and you can't open the door.
Okay. And Donald, you were going to?
No, I was just going to say, I like those, too, because you're right. You're not going to open the door unless you tear off the trim, the door trim at the side of the door. So, the door jamb. So, they're good.
And they're cheap, and they're everywhere. Flip locks.
Okay.
The makers of flip locks bring you... Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, and we got one more. And this one, boy, I can relate to, but I'll put it out here, and then y'all can...
I need to stop that. Quit that, Phil.
Y'all could discuss this a little bit, and then I can tell you my experience with it. But how do I fix my pocket door?
Oh, boy.
Says there seems to be... two sets of wheels on the top that roll on a metal track. One of the rollers seems to be disconnected and possibly off the track. I tried, but I can't reach it because the opening is too small.
It is.
Help, help, help.
We discussed this in depth one time.
We did.
That pocket door hangs like a shower door, doesn't it?
Similarly, it has wheels on rollers on the top, one on each side, from the part that roll on a metal track. And nothing on the bottom. I mean, there's no track on the bottom.
Yeah, they're just swinging. It's just swinging free at the bottom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do you do? How do you do it?
Well, the warden's house that she sold over there on wherever it was in Brook Hollow had these things throughout the house. You don't see them much anymore. They're allegedly guaranteed for life. It's why nobody really has much of a fix thing, because when they screw up, but I've never seen one that worked what I would call an older place perfectly. And Emily's had her, you'll find them a lot of times in bathrooms where you have the potty and the bathtub in kind of one little section, and then the sink, the basin and everything another.
Yeah.
And there's a little, but for privacy purposes, a little pocket door. They used to, mobile homes, of course, a lot, but I haven't seen one in a mobile home.
Yeah, they
home
used
in
to
a
use
while.
Them a lot.
But anyway, she had one that sounded similar to this guy's problem, and that the roller was either off the track or what, but it was the back roller naturally, so the door was hanging down like at an angle, you know, when you yeah. And so what I did is I took the front roller loose from the door, and then that way it allowed the front to drop down, and then the back, and then I tilted the door in and kind of reached it well enough to get a screw and tighten. That one had come loose. It hadn't come off. It hadn't come out of the door. The roller hadn't. But it had come off the track.
In other words, you dropped the door down and then it fit through the frame.
Yeah.
And
then I got it. I managed, and I think it was luck, to when I lifted it up, it went back on the track. And then the other one, I put the other one back on. There's a lot of solutions, you know, because if they're mostly in bathrooms, there's tile involved and everything. But if it's just a matter of sheetrock, you can repair sheetrock. If it has wallpaper, you got a problem because you can't match the pattern back. But if it's sheetrock, I would knock a hole in the sheetrock.
That's hard done.
But also anymore, you know, a lot of bathrooms now, like our bathroom, has a little separate compartment for the commode, but it doesn't have a door on it. It has
right.
a little thing. So anymore, that would probably come out of there and be put back in the wall, and a cased opening would go in there.
That's probably why they quit using this kind of doors.
That would solve your problem, yeah, because it is. The hardware varies from door to door, and I was either lucky that the whole roller hadn't come completely off, because I would have never, it would have fallen down into the abyss. And so actually just framing in a cased opening. She sold the house, and I don't know if we disclosed that or not. Oh, poor.
Carpenters will try to talk you out of using those. They hate them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure they do.
They don't like them.
Yeah, it requires special framing. You do kind of a ribbed structure-like thing anyway. And so.
So there.
There.
All right, we have a couple of guests on our ledger today. We're going to have, hopefully, talked to Dale Evans a while ago, and he's already going to be out in the sunshine.
All right.
And Max Robinson and Dale Evans, and we're going to talk about a thing called a biscuit joiner.
Yeah.
I've never seen one. Have you, Pat?
No. Does the sun really shine up there where Dale is?
He alleged that the sun was out. Where you can ask him that question in just a minute. We're with the Blind Handyman. Don Patterson's in the house. Don Shaw also. And I'm Phil Parr. We'll be right back. Hang on. Much weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. We are back. We were trying to do a conference. If anybody knows how to do a conference call, give us a call, because we don't know how. Obviously, we don't know how. Dale Evans is with us from Cochrane, Ontario, Canada. Sir, how are you?
I'm real good. I've moved outside here.
You moved outside. Well, let me turn you up a little bit. And also Max Robinson from Bowling Green, Kentucky.
Yeah, I am here.
He's
all
here.
Right.
Got Max on the landline and Dale on Skype. And welcome to both of you. We want to, Max, I think you said the other night you had just gotten your biscuit joiner, right?
That's right.
Have you had a chance to use it or do anything with it?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
Oh, have you now?
I made a frame that's sort of like a picture frame, except it's the framework for a trap door into the attic of the little house. And will never be seen because it's covered by paneling.
Uh-huh. This is for your wife's place.
Yeah.
That she's going to, she you got a building, and then she decided, well, you know, if Max gets a building, I do too.
That's exactly what happened. But what I did was I decided the building I'd gotten was too small, so
yeah.
I gave her my building, and I bought a bigger one.
And so you got the big building, and she's got the one that you fell in the door of.
That what?
That you fell in the door. First thing you did with that building was fell in the door, didn't you?
Did I put that on the list?
No.
That's exactly right. That's what I did. I fell. I didn't have a step, and it was a bit of a high step, and I was carrying something kind of heavy, and I fell right in.
You didn't put that on the list, but you told us when you were down here.
Okay. I must have been after you gave me that drink.
There you go.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. Dale, you're outside, you say.
Yeah, I've just come out into the backyard.
Uh-huh.
And that's one of the nice things about these laptop computers with wireless connections. You can walk all over with them.
Go anywhere you want to go, can't you?
And well, pretty much.
And you've got your joiner there with you, your biscuit...
Yeah, I do.
Biscuit joiner there with you? Or you're going to have some wood, and you're going to actually do some cutting with it.
I'll make a few cuts. Here it
all
is.
Right, well,
hold on just a minute. Don wanted to ask you a
couple questions. Yeah, enlighten us a bit about, for people who don't know what a biscuit joiner is, and I'm one of them. I mean, what's its specific claim to fame?
The purpose of the biscuit joiner is to make little slots in the edges of wood so that you can put little wooden, they call them biscuits, or little wooden plates between them. And these plates are usually made out of beech wood, quite dry, and they're compressed. And so you put glue along the edges of each of these boards that you're bringing together and into the slots. You shove these biscuits in and pull the boards together, and the slots work very much like dowels would to join the two boards.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
So they join the two boards together, but as I said, we talked the other night, this is something you want to hide. These are something you will find under a table.
You won't see them at all if they're done properly. It's where you take two boards. Let's say you're making a tabletop, and it's 3 feet wide, and your boards are only 6 inches wide. So you got to join a bunch of them side by each.
Okay.
And that's where you use your biscuit joiner to make these slots in each edge of the board, and put the biscuits between. And then you pull the boards together, clamp them with glue, and so you laminate a single wide board out of these multiple narrow ones.
Okay. All right. Well, are we ready to actually hear? First of all, this is a sit-on-the-floor machine, or what is this?
No, it's a handheld machine. I'll describe it to you. I've got it here. And mine, let me know if you're having trouble hearing me.
Well, you're fine.
I'm fine? Okay. The orientation of the machine when you're handling it is a long handle that ends in
hide in your inactive notification icons .. to see the hidden icons. Click this button.
What would I call that? A flat end plate. So the motor is in the long axis away from you.
Okay.
However, the blade turns at 90 degrees to that. So as I'm standing here with it in my hand, it's about 13 inches long altogether, with the cord coming out of the near end of it, and the far end of it is flat. Now, this flat far end has a 90-degree square. So if I set it on the table, there's an area that's about 6 inches by, well, I can measure it to be precise. I've got my little trusty talking tape measure here.
Yeah.
Max, is this what yours looks like, Max?
No, mine is an accessory for the shop smith.
Okay.
It's a very different machine.
All right. 5 and 5/8 inches. 5 and 3/8 inches.
So it's 5 and 11, almost 6 inches.
5 and 3/16 inches.
By about a little over 5 inches wide.
Okay.
That's what a talking tape measure sounds like, huh?
Yeah.
I never heard one before.
Well,
that's the cobalt.
Yeah.
In a minute, it will say turning off in 5 seconds.
It just did. That's going to beep. Come
All
on.
Right.
There it goes.
We couldn't hear the beep. But anyway, yours.
It's got a. As I set it on the table in front of me, the cord is pointing at me. There's this long, more or less tube that runs forward about. Altogether, the full thing is about 13 inches. And there's a flat surface on the table and a 90-degree face that comes up from the table pointing away from me. Now, that flat face has a fence arrangement on it, so I can reduce loosen a little finger bolt on the right-hand edge of it and drop a fence. So what happens is it's hinged. And so this piece that's facing away from me will now drop down towards the table to any angle I want it to. Normally you would use it at 90 degrees so that there's a little lip. So I'll try and describe this again. The flat surface of my router is sitting on the table. As I come to the front of this flat surface, there's a little step up. And then another flat surface, which is that fence that I've dropped down from the face of the router.
Now, are we calling this a router or a joiner?
I'm sorry, the plate joiner. Yeah, the plate joiner.
All right, so instead of moving the wood through it, you're going to push it into a piece of wood.
That's right. This flat face is attached to the machine by a couple of rails and spring-loaded resistance mechanisms. So... what I can do now is set that fence that I've dropped down against the tabletop, say onto the tabletop, and the step is against the edge of the tabletop. And if I push the handle part of it forward, it overcomes the spring resistance and comes up against the tabletop. And as I do that, further I go, the blade then protrudes through a slot in that little step to cut a notch into the, or a semicircular sort of channel into the edge of the table.
All right, and you can change sizes of blades, or can you?
You can in this case. There's a 4-inch blade for this one and a 2-inch blade for cutting different radius arcs into the wood.
Okay.
There's also then on the left-hand side a turret that rotates. This is the Porter Cable model, and it's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, I think it looks like 7 little steps. And I can rotate this turret and bring a different step to bear against a threaded pin, so I can adjust it for fine adjust it, but basically you set this pin. And each one of those steps allows the machine to go a different degree forward into the wood. And that's for different sizes of biscuits. So at the smallest level, it only goes a short distance into the wood for a fairly small biscuit. And as you rotate the turret around, it'll go into the wood, probably about an inch and a quarter, inch and a half.
So depending on the size biscuit you have and the size blade you're using, those two things would determine how big the cut is into your wood.
So I take it then the biscuits are prefab. You buy them like in a stick or what?
Yeah, you buy them in loose. They come in packages. The last time I bought them, I bought I think 1,000.
How are they long? How long are they?
Well, these things, they, again, depends on the size of the biscuits, and they numbered them. 00 to number 4, I think, and then there's an FF, and I don't really know. I've not seen those ones, but they vary in length from about 3/4 of an inch long and maybe 1/2 inch wide, oval-shaped.
Did you say you bought 1,000?
Yeah.
Wow. In a sense, not like a dowel rod that you buy in a length, I guess, and cut yourself. These are pre-cut, then.
No, these are all pre-cut, and they're specific size, and they're numbered according to their size.
They look like a little flat cookie, and they go on, instead of drilling a hole in the board,
right.
As I gather, you do these on the surface of the boards.
You do it on the edge of the board.
On the edge of the board, yeah.
Just the same way you would a dowel if you're going to put the number of boards together to form a tabletop. You put dowels in the edge. In this case, you're putting little slots in the edge.
Yeah.
Okay, so they're not on the edge of the board. I mean, they're on the edge of the board, but they're not on the top nor the bottom surface of the board. They're in the middle of the edge.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, right. Now I'm finally. It takes me a while. I'm old, you know.
Well, it's kind of hard to describe it anyway.
It is.
And they're much more forgiving than a dowel. You can slide the edge back and forth. You know, you can slide it back and forth a little bit and get them in alignment before the glue hardens.
Yeah.
Well, also, all right. So, what gauge do you have there, though, to determine how high or low you are in regards to coming into the side of that board?
Yeah.
You don't want to be too close to the bottom or too close to the top. So like if I'm going to use a 1-inch thick board, is there a gauge you set that? Or?
Yeah, the fence that I talked about that is hinged and I flipped over.
Right.
And I can set an angle, so I can go straight in at 90 degrees to the edge.
Right.
Or I can go to any angle, 45 degrees in either direction. And that's very useful if you're having to, say you want to put them in the ends of a mitered edge for.
That's not what he's asking, Dale. He's asking about height adjustment.
Yes, I know. I'm just describing this. So that particular fence will adjust through any angle. But the other thing, there's a little knob on the top that allows you to thread it up and down.
Yeah.
Okay. There we get the how far from the top or the bottom of the board.
Yeah, so I can raise that fence higher or drop it closer to the table surface or raise it up above the table surface higher. And usually you want to try and get about the middle of the board that you're working with.
Well,
but I have done some work with thick material, 2x4 material and bigger, where I put 2 biscuits in, and each one of them about 3/4 of an inch, no, less than that, about 1/2 inch from either surface, top and bottom surface. So I have a double row of biscuits parallel to each other. To reinforce that wider junction.
But what increments? In other words, for like a totally blind person like yourself, then this is going to be kind of hit and miss. I mean, it sounds like you better have a little test material there, right?
You might do. The slot that on the face of the machine that this cutter comes through is easily touchable, and so you can use a rotomatic rule or anything you want to set the distance from the edge of that to the fence. But for the most part, it's fairly arbitrary. It's important to orient your boards correctly. So if I'm putting a tabletop, I orient all my boards top side up. And as long as I continue to use the top side up, I'm always going to have that direct spacing.
Assuming that the boards were the same thickness, you're right.
Yeah. Well, even if they're thinner or thicker, I'm always going to be that orientation from the top.
From the top, right.
As long as I keep that orientation right, my boards will line up.
Yeah. What I do is, what I did on the one I did, I laid the boards down next to each other the way they were going to be, and made a mark. You could put a piece of masking tape on there or something, and then cut the tape at the joint, and then so you have your mark where you want the biscuit to be and where the boards line up, and then there's a center line on your biscuit joiner. That on mine, it's already deep enough to feel. If it was just a line, you could take a file and take a 3-cornered file and make it deep enough to feel.
Yeah.
And then just line up the edge of the masking tape with that center line on the joiner. Just zip it in, and it'll cut the slot. And you take the other board and do the same. And so your biscuit slots are right. You know, are lined up with each other the way they're supposed to be. And then you put the glue on, put it back together. You know, put the biscuit in, put it together, and you can move it back and forth a little bit to get the tape lined up again. And then you clamp it, and you're set.
There you go. You got. But you know, you said a minute ago that you would put the boards face up. I would think just the opposite. If you want to make a smooth tabletop, look like you would put them face down so that the thickness wouldn't matter.
No, you want them face up so that when you put them all together, they're all going to be
the same level.
At the same height as each other.
Well, if your boards are all the same thickness, it doesn't matter which way you do it.
Wouldn't make any difference.
Oh, yeah, but they're not likely to always be just that good. And usually you're going to put a finish on them, you know, anyway. So, like, normally what you would do is once you put them together, you're going to plane them or whatever else to really get rid of that.
All right, guys.
Mine works like a table. Like, I don't know, maybe like a anyway, on a table, so I would have to work mine the other way up, the other way, good side down, because...
that's what I was thinking.
What I do is I set the board on the chopsmith's table and then just slide it forward. And you can even use the miter gauge to slide it forward if you want to, and just compress the springs, and it makes the cut.
All right, I have another question. Like I say, not having ever seen one of these, is the mechanism itself, the blade, the bit, the whatever is doing this hole, is it more on a drill basis, or it's not a router? I mean, or is it like from compression, from force? What does it do?
It's a saw blade.
Sorry, carry on, Max.
Yeah, it's a thick saw blade that just
like
makes
a
cut about, what is it, Dale, about a quarter inch wide? Or
yeah, it's
like
a good
that?
Quarter inch, yeah.
Like it's almost like a dado blade, except not, it doesn't have go in and
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
like
single
that.
Blade
yeah.
And a big carbide thing, quite thick carbide teeth.
Yeah.
So is it the thickness of the biscuit? Does it look like the impression of the biscuit? I mean, that's what makes the hole, right? Does it just...
That's correct.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. And because you're pushing it into the edge of the wood, it makes an arc-shaped cut into the wood.
All right, so
that arc shape is exactly the same as the shape of the edge of the biscuit.
All right, is it going back and forth like a reciprocating saw?
No, it's spinning.
No,
it's a rotating
it's spinning.
Blade.
It's rotating.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
it's rotating. And it rotates around the vertical axis, if that helps you.
Yeah.
And
the blade is in the horizontal axis.
And pushes horizontally into the edge.
Interesting.
Now, the other thing is you can retract the fence. This fence doesn't have to be, you don't have to use that to measure your top. You can work it on a table surface as well, using the flat base as your reference point. Either way, it's commonly used. The problem with using it on the tabletop is that then you're going to have a fixed distance to the edge of that cut.
Right.
And as long as that's suitable, it works fine, and lots of people use them exactly that way.
Yeah, surely they make a table to go with them, and I mean, yours happens to be handheld, but surely there is. I have a handheld router also, but I also have a router table. Sure. So.
I've only seen one system one time, and it was it used a table, and the blade was oriented so that it came up from underneath the table when you stepped on a pedal, and there was a fence along that. And so you place your board where you want the cut to be, and then you step on this pedal, and the biscuit blade comes up from inside the table and makes that cut.
Makes your
I've
cut.
Only ever seen, I've not seen one actually up close and dirty. I've just seen it used on television.
Now, Max, yours is on a table setup, right?
Yeah, but the blade is horizontal on mine. It's like you had a drill press, and you put the blade, you put the arbor on the end of a shaft, on the end of a shaft coming out of a drill press, Chuck. And so you adjust the quill to get the height. The chopsmith works in drill press mode, so that's what you do. And so you let the quill adjust the height above the table, and then you just slide the board along the table and into the blade, and you got it.
All right, Max, go slow. What is an arbor?
Okay, that's the thing in the center of the blade that holds it onto the shaft.
Okay. The reason why I'm asking, because like 50-something years ago, when I was at the Texas School for the Blind, we had a drill press, and it had a blade. It was like a drill inside a little square box. In other words, it would drill square holes. So in a sense, this was the precursor or the predecessor to what... And it would drill them to the depth in a piece of wood that you wanted.
That's the mortising bit.
Okay, and the little drill was spinning inside this little cage it was in. Yeah, I mean it was doing the cutting. Does that make sense? Or
yeah, I have one I use on my drill press for cutting mortises.
Yeah, and so that was similar. I mean that would be a similar
similar thing. Yes.
Yeah.
Except it's not a bit in the case of a biscuit joiner. It's a saw blade. It looks very much like a saw blade. It's just kind of thick and small. It's four inches in diameter.
Right. Okay, interesting.
All right, Dale,
he pushes his wood into the thing from the side. So that blade is spinning, again, in the vertical axis, And then he pushes his piece of material into that blade.
Yep.
As it's spinning.
Yeah. Yeah.
Art, are you ready to
speed up fast? It runs fast.
You ready to cut some wood, Dale?
Sure. I got a piece of wood here, and I just clamp it to my table here with a little F clamp.
Actual doing something on the blind hand you have besides sitting around drinking and talking.
Yeah.
I think that's good. That's good, isn't it?
Yeah. The other thing about the biscuit joiner, the handheld ones, is they have what they call a bale-type handle. It's a handle like a bucket handle that's on the top of the bit, that the part of the machine that has the fence and so on, so that you hold it with your, well, if you're normally left right-handed, you would hold that with your left hand in place against the wood and in the position, and then you squeeze the trigger and push it in. So I'm going to let her go. Now, you may have heard that slight bogging down. I'll do it again.
I did.
When I go into the wood, you'll hear it slow down just briefly while it goes in, and then I'll retract. So.
That's quick.
Boy, it is quick.
That one, does it?
No, it doesn't take long. Setting up takes a whole lot longer than that.
Now,
that's true.
Now, Dale, we've talked about, you know, the placement of the wood as far as top to bottom, where you want these, the top, depending on the thickness of the wood or your measurement. But this depth on the size that you're doing, is the depth preset?
Yes. There's the turret I was speaking of, which you rotate.
Right.
And it has several steps in it. So you select the depth that you want.
Okay.
I wasn't going to the deepest.
Because you would want to make sure it pretty much fit the biscuit. You wouldn't want it to be too deep.
That's right.
I mean, you would want it to fit the stock you were using, right?
Yeah.
And on this machine you got, I mean, I can't read the scale, but the scale will tell you that's a 00 or a number one biscuit or a number two
and
biscuit.
And that's the way you buy biscuits, right? By that 00?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
00 is the smallest, and what, 20 is the big one?
There. Yeah, 20. No, there's a 40, I think.
There are 40? I don't,
and then there's something they call a double F, which I don't know.
Sounds like
I don't think I have a setting on my joiner for 40s. I think I just have 00, 10, and 20.
Well, I think we determined the other night that these were named by the British because they call everything a biscuit, a piece of bread, any bread is a biscuit, isn't it?
They call a cookie a biscuit.
Yes, that's correct. Cookies.
And the things look like cookies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, they look like an oval-shaped cookie, really. Instead of a nice round one, it's as if they're somewhat oval-shaped.
Well, they are oval-shaped.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's to fit the arc, you see, that you've cut.
That you cut in both pieces of wood. I got
that's
you. I got you.
Now, you can use them in other very creative ways. I've used it. I made a workbench downstairs. And so what I did is I cut plywood, 3/4-inch plywood, into 3-inch strips. And then I put them together, the edge of one board against the flat surface of the other, to form something like angle iron.
Okay.
And so I put biscuit joints, I put slots along the face of the one piece of plywood and in the edge of the other piece of plywood, and then glued them together with these biscuits. So that gives me a really strong surface without any metallic fixers. So if I was to hit that with a saw or something, it's not going to destroy the teeth or a chisel or anything else. There's no metal to be in the way, and yet I've got a very, very strong joint at 90 degrees there.
Yeah, you could have probably bought that somewhere, but then you wouldn't have got to make it, would you?
Yeah.
I've never heard of anything like that.
I've got one more question about these biscuits.
All right.
I'm kind of keen on the length. I think I am. Well, really not sure. But give me the basic dimensions in inches or portions thereof
of biscuit.
Length and width and thickness.
A number 20 biscuit would be what, Max? 2.5
I don't remember.
Long?
About 2.5 inches, I think, by an inch and a quarter or something like that.
That's how wide they are?
And they're about a quarter inch thick.
Okay. Yeah.
They're all the same thickness.
In other words, Max, you know what screen molding looks like, or Dale, you probably do too. Would they almost resemble, except with the rounded end, a piece of screen molding? It's kind of beveled on the sides, you know, kind of rounded?
Oh, just a tiny, tiny bit. Just enough to make it a little easier to slip into the slots.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. They're pretty rough because they're compressed and dried beech wood. They're pretty rough, and part of the point is that they swell when they get that, when the wet glue hits them, they'll swell up. So
okay.
In addition to the glue joining them together, you get that that friction fit as well. And actually, once they swell, they're a bugger to.
This would be.
You got to get them in there pretty fast.
This would hard work. This would
I ruined
be,
one and had to take it out, as a matter of fact.
I mean, but this would be a perfect. I mean, like for a finishing, like a good furniture maker, right? I mean, that's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's where they're starting to use them quite a lot now, because they're much quicker to work than, say, dowels. And they have the other advantage in that the grain of these biscuits runs, I wouldn't say exactly parallel to the long axis, but diagonal to that long axis. And what that means is when the wood that you're joining together starts to expand and contract, it does it across the width. And when you're using a dowel, the grain of the dowel runs opposite to that. So the dowels tend to break free, whereas these biscuits, because the grain runs in a similar direction to the direction of the edges of the board you're putting together, that doesn't happen. They swell and expand, and contract with changes in moisture, very much as the host wood that they're joining.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's really neat.
Host wood.
Yeah.
I like that, host wood. Max,
yeah.
we have a few minutes. Tell us, you have a thing called a shopsmith. Tell us what that is.
Okay, well, it's a combination table saw, wood lathe, and drill press. And it just depends on how you set it up. It has a part that's got the motor in it and a speed adjustment. And it has several shafts coming out. The main shaft is the one so far that I've used, but there are other points where you can take power out of it. And they just have all kinds of accessories. What I have with it, a disc sander also. What I can do with mine is a table saw, disc sander, drill press, and horizontal drilling machine too. You can leave it horizontal and put the chuck on the shaft and drill in from the side if
okay.
you ever need to do that. But they have belt sander adapters and bam saw adapters and jointer adapters and accessories and just about anything you can imagine. You can get an accessory for it, and they say it's fits in the space of about a bicycle, which is about right, I guess. It's maybe 6 feet long and 2.5 or 3 feet wide.
Okay. Does it have its own table?
Yeah. It has a table that you can adjust in. You can turn it every which way but loose, as they say.
So, Max, in your opinion, on a scale from 1 to 10, how user-friendly is it? I mean, like the old Kirby vacuum cleaners that would do 101 things, but you spent the rest of your life trying to figure out how to set it up for that.
Yeah. Well, the instructions are really well written and clear. So, if you just get somebody to read you the instructions and follow them, it'll take you a little longer to do something because you do have to take the saw blade off and take the guard off and then put the chuck on it and then raise it up so it's vertical to change from sawing to drill press, but it is going to take you a little longer. But then you've got all those machines all in one space, and
right?
People who have them, and I know three people, you and a couple others, who have them swear by them. Just think they're the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah, well, I think it's good. It's going to take me a little longer to do something than it will somebody who has separate machines. I'll grant you that.
But for instance, we were talking about your biscuit joiner today. So you've cut your planks for your table you're building. How long is it going to take you to go from that setup to the biscuit joiner?
Oh, let's see. I have to take off the saw blade and the saw guard,
uh-huh.
Set them aside, and then adjust the table right and set it up, raise it up to be vertical, and then put the biscuit joiner on the shaft, And so, I don't know, it would probably take, it would probably take me about 15 minutes. Is, you know, it's going to take a blind person longer to do anything.
Yeah, that's
than,
not
than
bad. No, but that's not bad.
Not bad.
Well, considering that you got everything in one, you know, I've got all kinds of tools, but then I have a little more space than some people.
Uh-huh.
And I'm happy with what I got. However, if she does this bathroom thing, I may not.
That's true.
That's my wife's thinking about making a handicapped access bathroom. We'll talk about that someday when I'm really angry. But shops sounds, but they're blind friendly. I mean, a blind guy can do it. You do it.
Yeah, I guess.
The thing to do would be when you set up for one operation, try to do everything you can in that one shot and then go to the next whatever it is, probably, rather than setting up and resetting.
Yeah, that's the trick. If you plan out your work well in advance,
yeah.
Don't lose all that much time.
Yeah, but one of the neat things you can do is if you say you're cutting a miter, you can set the table up to cut the miter, and then you can just, without changing the angle of the table, you can pull off the blade. You can pull off the saw blade and put the disc sander blade on,
oh.
disc sander on, and then you can sand down the end of that with the disc sander without ever changing the angle of the table.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a nice feature.
Dale, do you have one, Dale?
Not a sawsmith, no.
No, but
no, I have a table saw and a jointer and a drill press and a 18-inch wide drum sander and.
But you've got a basement.
Yes,
also,
I do.
Which we don't have in Texas, and I don't know, do they have those basements in Kentucky, Max?
No, we got too many rocks in Kentucky. We don't have basements in Kentucky.
We got our water table's too high, so we don't have basements in Texas either.
Well, we have them mostly to protect us against the frost, but you know, a lot of people actually turn their garages into shops, and that's I think what I'd like to do someday.
Yeah.
That'd be neat.
Get out of the basement.
Well, you're not going to have a car, that's for sure.
I would like to turn my shop into a garage, actually. I'm sick of it.
Well, we're doing it on time, Don.
We got about 3 minutes or so.
About 3 minutes left. Well, I'd say we described a biscuit just so. Obviously, they can buy a biscuit joiner for your shop, Smith, or you know. So, I guess a grinder also and a router and all sorts of things.
Oh, yeah. That's those two.
All right. One other quick question, Max, because you have the drill press. Well, so does Phil, actually, or Dale said he has. Could you buy an equivalent drill bit that would fit your drill press that would substitute for a biscuit joiner?
No. Because it doesn't work that way.
Okay.
The blade is in the horizontal. The way mine works, the blade is in the horizontal plate. I think Dale's works the same way. So it's a saw blade. Picture a saw blade, but turned on side. You know, turned horizontally.
Well, but you couldn't you have one at the end of some sort of shaft that came down and you set it at a certain height and scoot a piece of wood against it? Surely.
Well, you couldn't cut the arc.
You could. I wouldn't. That's dangerous.
Yeah. You couldn't cut the arc right. You could theoretically you could cut a cutout for a biscuit with a router, but the arc wouldn't be right. It would just be a squarish hole.
Besides that, with a drill press, you wouldn't have a fence, would you?
Yeah, that's right.
There'd be no fence.
You could have one.
You what?
You could set one.
You could screw a tube. I mean, you could clamp a tube before on there and have a little fence.
Yeah. But I agree with Dale. It seems kind of dangerous to use a drill press like that.
It's also very hard on the drill press. The bearings aren't intended to take that kind of lateral lateral force.
Yeah. What is your shopsmith cost, Max? What does a thing like that run?
It's about $3,200.
$3,200.
Yeah.
$3,200.
$3,200.
But on a cabinet maker table saw, you could spend damn near that much on just the table saw.
For a table saw, I have a $150 table saw that does me fine. It's not belt driven.
Matter of fact, that saw stop thing, that costs about $5,000. Top saw?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it was $2,500.
Well, maybe they've got a cheaper model out now, but the one I looked at was online was $5,000.
Well, what is your biscuit joiner worth, Dale? What does a guy pay for one of those that you hold in your hand?
This one is an expensive one. You can get them cheaper. And I just see it online right now at houseoftools.com for $249 Canadian. I think it's about $240 American right now.
Houseoftools.com.
Yeah, houseoftools.com.
And what did yours cost?
I bought mine about 4 years ago. I couldn't tell. I think probably closer to $300 back then.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so really?
The accessory for the ShopSmith was, I think, about $120.
Yeah. And there certainly are much cheaper versions than this one. This is a Porter Cable. It's about as good as they get.
Yeah, Porter Cable makes the best stuff, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, among the better ones, yeah.
I don't have any Porter Cable stuff, but I hear it's good.
You do? You have a little staple gun that I'm going to get repaired.
That's the one that blew out a...
just an O-ring, I think.
Blew out an O-ring. Blew out my flip-flop. Stepped on a pop top, that kind of stuff, you know. Well, guys, even though we didn't get the old conference call going, we'll try to figure that out. Maybe we'll do a little research on that. Maybe you can help us do some research. I've done
it out when you're not pressed for time.
We're not pressed for time is right. Max, thank you, sir, and
thank you, Bill.
I look forward to seeing you. Probably won't see you till November of 08, but go ahead and make your reservations because we're going to do it again in 08.
Save those coins.
Yeah.
Good to talk to you, Max.
Good to talk to you again.
All right. We'll talk to you. Neil, thank you, sir, for coming and being with us. And
that was good fun.
Helping us with the old Handyman Show. We'll do it again in a few days. You've given up on coming to Texas this fall, though, I see.
Not necessarily. I haven't given up anything yet.
Well, we're here, sir, and we got a lady that'll come and pick you up at the airport and take you back.
Wonderful.
Great to hear from you, Dale.
Yeah, right, great talking with you, Dale.
Thank you much, Dale, and we'll see you in a day or two.
Great. Bye, guys.
And Dale Evans from Cochrane, Ontario, Canada.
Yeah, I tell you what, with that excellent, I mean outstanding Skype connection.
Really
that,
good, that was good just, Skype connection.
Yeah, right? Man.
I only heard it echo maybe one time.
Yeah, it was good.
That little echo. Wish we could conference call, do a little research on that, see if we can't figure out how to do them.
Yeah.
All right, good show, gentlemen. Pat, thank you.
Yes, sir, enjoyed it.
Mr. Don Shaw.
Yeah.
Professor Don, the Access Technology Specialist at Angelina College.
That's what they say.
Works the hours he wants to. And
pretty much.
Do you have any students this month, this year, Don?
Well, you never know if one might come along
might
pretty soon.
Fallon might foul out.
Yeah.
All right, I'm Phil Parr. We thank you for listening. We'll do it again next week. Come be a guest on the show. If you enjoy the show, we'll come and do it with us. We'd love to have you. If you do any handyman thing at all, or you have questions about handyman, or you just want to talk to three old blind guys, come and visit with us. Phil at philparr.net or philparr@consolidated.net or Don, what is your email address?
Mine is n5gbi@yahoo.com.
n5gbi@yahoo.com.
That's
contact
right.
One of us and we'll put you on the blind handyman. I'm Phil Parr. He said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw.